Welcome to the BristolCon Fringe, a series of readings from the science fiction and fantasy community. This podcast was recorded in front of a live audience in the centre of Bristol. Okay, so it is that part of the evening where we get to play Spanish Inquisition. So let's start with you, Steph. And clearly you have been travelling down those Somerset country roads in the dark, and there's no lighting or anything. That has to be taken from real experience.
Yes, it was. A rather spooky evening on the way back from Wales to Bristol, and it was snowing. And my car was playing up, juddering a bit, and I thought, whoops, what's going to happen next? But we did make it home, but yes, I thought, what if there's lots of temporary lights? What if I got stuck at a light and something happens?
And usually there are lots of temporary lights. It doesn't seem to matter when you go down those little Somerset roads. There's always lots of temporary lights.
With the Men at Work sign and nobody there next day either, so... That sort of got woven into a story, really.
I must say, you have a very good Gollum voice.
Perfected over many drunken party episodes, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's always something we enjoy in these things, where people do the voices.
Yeah, oh good.
I was just listening to the one we've just put up on the podcast with Joe Lindsay Walton, where it was all dialogue and he did different accents for each one of the characters because it was the only way you could tell who was actually talking.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's good. But your monsters definitely had personality, and personality actually came over in the voice as well.
Oh, good, yeah, yeah. I do try and sort of do it as a presented thing, a bit of a... You know, role players.
Sure. Is there some sort of mythos that you're working with here, that you have some idea as to what these monsters are, or was it just a story that came to you and you put things in it?
Yeah, well, I've always been fascinated by sort of parallel dimensions and strangeness and things sort of meshing into other worlds, so I tend to write about that quite a lot. It seems to pop up as a theme quite a lot. But the monsters, I think, were probably just sort of, I've seen old plastic sacks in a tree and they looked spooky flapping in the rain and the dark. And I think something like that must have stuck in my head, and I tend to sort of weave things in.
Sort of like extended vultures, so they had longer necks.
Yes, that's it. And those long bobby necks, which, sort of made it a little bit stranger, I think. Yeah.
So moving on to Paul now. We've had Darkest Somerset, now we've got Darkest Wiltshire.
I've got some country lanes and two sets of traffic lights on the way home tonight, so thanks for that.
Yeah, I mean, you actually do live out in the country, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. We live in Fairford. And I did like the lack of reason, actually. It's very M.R. James, the sensation that obviously what these things are isn't very important.
I think sometimes you can try and explain stuff too much to a reader, but it's best to let them make their own take on it, to be honest, Paul, yeah.
Now, Paul, I can't think actually of anything much more horrific than having to go back to school. So, you're scaring life with memories and stuff like that. But, whatever possessed you to want to write about your school days?
Well, I had to, really. It's that they're not necessarily my school days. There are things involved here that didn't happen. I should point that out. You know, they are. The names have been changed to protect the guilty. And it was an exorcism. It was the blues. I had to write it to get rid of it, or at least try and deal with it. And it struck me reading that first chapter, that all the historical stuff there is true, that's all fact, as it were.
It is one of those things. I was thinking that with these two things that you've got, we've almost got our equivalent of Lovecraft's New England, the whole West Country thing with all these country villages and whatever, cut off from everywhere. It's quite a spooky old landscape in many ways.
It really is. I mean, growing up amongst that, There was a TV show called Children of the Stones when I was growing up, which begins with a stone monster suddenly appearing in the middle of the road in Avebury. And we drove regularly through Avebury when I was a kid, and so I would be hiding in the back seat every time.
So, mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest of them all? Clearly it's Simon Le Bon. Or is it John Taylor? I don't know. John Taylor. We'll take a poll later. The current
BBC 4 Top of the Pops repeats are right on this era. So Top of the Pops is a bit of an emotional roller coaster for me at the moment.
Because now I want to hear Yes do that song with very long title.
There's actually Tor.com Publishing have been kind enough to put up on YouTube a page of videos of music featured in Chalk. So I'll be linking that when I do my big blog tomorrow.
I think I'm going to have to go and listen to that. Very, very sad of me, even though I was well out of school by the time all that happened. Yeah. Alright, so let's throw it open to the floor now. Has anybody got any questions?
Yeah. I was interested in your story. You say it was inspired by your own experience driving down country roads at night.
Yeah.
Was there a reason that you chose to make your character male, or was it you didn't even think about it, you just did it?
No, I thought I'd write different characters. I'd do men and women. And Steve just happened to be like your average bloke in a van going about his job, driving between towns. And I just thought, he seems like a neighbour, like someone you have living up your street, like a local workman. And I thought that made him a bit more credible, but could easily have been a woman. But I want him to be like a travelling, not salesman, but a sort of craftsman. So he was always out and about in the van and had excuses to vanish, you know. Find excuses to make his job, you know, a reason why he didn't go home, really. I didn't really think about him an awful lot, but I suppose he's a bit of a amalgam of quite a few people I've known, sort of aunties, uncles, or, you know, family. So, I wanted him real, like a real person. So he's a bit of a bits of people character.
Is he white fan, Matt?
He's a bit, yeah, like a sort of nice bloke, but with his rather shady side, as many people have.
The way that you don't cast judgment on him, that you kind of, it leaves us wondering if he's going to get out of it. Because if you'd been very judgmental and against him, we'd think he definitely wouldn't. I think that was very clever.
Yeah, I think he doesn't get out of it, but I think there's an option where maybe he did, but maybe that's another story. It's hard to know sometimes, because I quite often write and leave an ambiguous ending in a way, so that, you know, people can put their own spin on it. But the story went to my writers group, so it's Croft Writers first, and I remember I was a bit harsher on him in the story, because he's cheating and all that, and they said, no, you can't put that, da 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 da. So he got rewritten quite a bit, and he became a bit more sympathetic, I think.
I was wondering how much Marie got paid for the bounty.
Yeah. But
Mary, any more questions? Yes.
Possibly to get up on one of the points you mentioned there, but is the real horror in both sort of stories from tonight the not so much the monsters, but the fact that the people find themselves in positions where they can't fully control their environment, and therefore that sense of not being able to do anything about whatever the situation is?
Yeah, for me that's a big thing when I write a story. I like to have heroes and heroines pop up from time to time, but I try and write really an average person, and what if that happened to you? What if you were the person at the traffic lights and it really did happen? what would you, because I'm one of those people that loves to watch old, you know, the horror films and go, oh God, what would I do? So in a way, so I'm always speculating, and I think that that is sort of really, you know, a sort of main thing with my stories anyway, is that it could be, I like to think, real, in that it'll happen in a street that people know, or in a, something weird happening in a shop, you know, like Primark or something. So it's sort of weird, bizarre steps into normal day-to-day life as we know it sort of thing. But, I don't know if you...
My hero is to some extent the monster. And it's... I think it's really important that it's not a story where... It's not a revenge fantasy, it's about cycles of abuse. So I think a lot of the presentation, and maybe even the reading thus far, sort of indicates that you might know where you think you know where this is going, but that's not the case. And it's much more about, you know, people talk about consensus reality, and in the case of a lot of us, it's more non-consensual reality. And that's certainly the case in Wagoner's case. And... that not having enough options in one's life is something that applied across the board in a lot of ways back then. And that.
You said that you've been working on Chalk for, it was like a product of 20 years, so I was like wondering what the gestation looked like. Did you know it was going to be a novel of this kind that you were sort of chipping out as a stone, or did it come from...
Well, that was several attempts at writing it and selling it, so there's been lots and lots of different versions over the years, but it was always going to be a novel. I just sort of, as you say, boiled it down enough at the end of it. And this is with two or three people who are thanked in the back, who kind of gave huge pushes in one direction or another, the last of which being Lee Harris, my editor at Tor.com, who did a wonderful job. And so it really was just a question of lots of input, keeping on trying different versions and getting input back.
How much does setting a story in the countryside change it from what you thought it might be to begin with?
With that one, I think the countryside made it more spookier, because you're more isolated and the guy's out on his own. He can't pull over into someone's drive, or he can't stop in a main road and talk to other people. I think him being out in the middle of nowhere on his own, I think gave it an edge of more creepiness. I'm writing a story at the moment, I've got a short one, about a young woman who's visited by these sort of black-eyed kids and weird stuff, and she's in a glass house that her aunt had designed, and it's like a goldfish bowl box of glass, and again she's sort of the vulnerable person. I mean, she comes out as the strong heroine character in the end, but and she survives the experience, but I think the story would be really different if it was in a town or a city, you know, with streets and shops and stuff, but it might work in a different way if I put it in that sort of setting, I think. But I think the countryside always can creep you out when it gets dark, so it's a good setting.
Ask Paul, but Stefan can jump in on this, because a lot of horror nowadays has to sort of edge around using the internet and using mobile phones and the like, but obviously you don't have to do that. So was that liberating to not have to worry about that? For Steph, I guess, because you use the mobile phone as a plot device, which is very effective, so was that a conscious decision?
Well, I think you've answered your own question about me, so...
Right, thanks. I think everyone's so reliant on technology now, to be honest, Pete, and when it's not there, you can start to flap, you know, and think, oh, my internet's down, oh, God, can't do Twitter and blah, blah, blah. So for him to have the phone connection and then it's gone, I think... heightened his vulnerability and the, I hope, upped the fear factor and tension a bit, because he really was isolated totally, you know, not even his lifeline of his little buzzy phone. I did sort of, that's the trouble, I think, when you're writing now in a modern day, unless your character doesn't have a mobile phone, it seems weird, so you have to sort of try and disable the phone or something in some way if you want it to be totally, totally creepy out. Yeah.
So the question for Paul was, did you find it liberating? Not having to worry about that.
I guess. It's not like I had many options in how to tell the story, really. You know, it is where it is. Wonderfully, you know, part of the story does hinge around cycling into the nearest town to buy vinyl records from a store that also sold furniture, which there's all sorts of things that would only ever happen in the mid-80s. Not really ever used as nostalgia, because, you know, nostalgia is the enemy, but literally in the case of this book.
Any other questions in the audience? Mid-80s compact discs.
Vinyl.
Yeah, but much too expensive for school children to afford.
But I had it. Yeah. Okay. Steph, for the benefit of people on the podcast, can you tell us a little bit more about your work and where they can buy it?
All right, I've got a website which is stephmins.weebly.com. It's a free website, so I don't pay anything, so I chose that one, which I built myself. It's got all the links on there for everything on Amazon, which has been published, anthologies by various publishers that have got my stories in, and my own stuff, my first self-published effort, which is the book I was reading from, The Obsidian Path. That's all centrally on my website, and you can just type me into Google and you'll get that, and you'll find my Amazon author's page with all the links and everything as well on Amazon Book. So,
and your book is available through CreateSpace as well, so if you have paper, they can get it.
Yes, I've got the copies there, but it's out as Kindle too, so if I must admit, I quite enjoy my Kindle reading now, and it's cheaper, so I shouldn't say that, should I?
And Paul, again, for the benefit of the podcast, obviously we want everybody to go out and buy Chalk, but what's happening with the comics and the TV?
Well, Chalk is out as we speak when this podcast goes out in audio, ebook, and physical form, and is in Forbidden Planets and bookstores everywhere as well. This summer, Saucer State, the sequel to and completion of Saucer Country, my Vertigo comic, is out from IDW, and in the form of 2 6-issue miniseries, same creative team back, very proud of it, delighted we could finish that story, and there'll be a third Litchford novella out sometime this year.
Any more questions? In which case, announcements. Paul, I think you have one.
Oh, yes. I've actually got an advert.
On Saturday, 3rd of June, in Fairford, I'm holding, as part of the bigger Fairford Festival, the Fairford Festival of Fiction. We've got 7 authors coming along in a tent with only 150 chairs in it, and I'm staging my little town of Fairford's first literary festival. And it's very geeky, because it's me. We've got Emma Newman, the SF author, delivering her workshop on how to get past fear and start writing. We've got Simon Guerrier and Dr. Marek Kakula from the Royal Greenwich Observatory talking about their book, The Scientific Secrets of Doctor Who. We've got Sarah McIntyre, the children's author and illustrator, who's worked a lot with Philip Reeve, who will be doing an all-ages session for very little ones. And everybody else. We've got Martin Waits, the Exeter-based crime writer. We've got Shugufta Kay, the Bristol poet. And top of the bill, we've got Stephen Moffat, the showrunner of Doctor Who and the creator of Sherlock, who's been delighting in telling me that he turned down the Hay on Wye Festival to come to us. So I've got some tickets with me. The whole event will cost you exactly £6. You can pop in and out all day. That ticket also gains you entry to the bigger Fairford Festival, where there are bands and stalls and bouncy castles and everything you'd expect from a local festival. There's a parade at noon. I've got some Daleks for the parade. The Daleks will be parading with the mayor and the town crier and the fire engine all around Fairford. And the Daleks will also be doing a show at 1 o'clock in the main marquee, where they answer children's questions. So, between you and me, the Daleks have proven a little hard to negotiate with, but we'll get to So, anyway, I've got some tickets with me. We've only got 150 shares. We've sold 25 fairly immediately, and we haven't started publicising it anywhere yet. If anybody wants one, I've got tickets with me for £6, or you can look it up on Eventbrite, search Eventbrite Fairford Fiction, and you'll find it, but that costs you a bit more because they put an extra monies on it. So anyway, thank you. Hopefully, June the 3rd, please come on.
Alrighty. Mention of Philip Reeve reminds me we should congratulate our local writer on being shortlisted for the Carnegie Medal.
Oh, yeah.
Fingers crossed for that one, although the competition does seem to be very stiff, as it always is, for these big awards. And we're keeping our fingers crossed as well for Emma Newman in the Hugo. A reasonable chance that after Atlas will get in, and obviously to in jeopardy. So we shall see. Has anybody else got any announcements that they want to make? Jerry, do you
come in? There's obviously a pub night in the Shakespeare next Monday, if anybody would like to come. There's going to be do. I am officially levelling up this week. I'm going up a whole level. And because I'm having a birthday ending in zero, I'm having a thing at the Shakespeare next Saturday from 4 o'clock onwards. So if anybody wants to come down, have a drink, have a slice of cake, it would be really nice.
Yay, 20!
Yes, 20! And a bit.
Hardware.
Yes, all of the best people have a birthday ending in a zero this year. Okay, anybody else got any announcements that I just wanted to make? You try and remember if you've got one?
I'm trying to remember it.
Yeah, well, obviously, if you can't remember it, it's not that important. Tom, now would you like to tell us about podcasts next month?
Yes, I have been beavering away as I've now done the backlog of all of 2016 and just finished January before this evening started. So we're from next month aiming to have a week turnaround from record to upload. As it stands, tonight should be beginning of April, so it's just a couple of weeks away. So that's good. Next month is our annual SFF open mic. So all of you budding writers, or those just too nervous to stand up here and talk for 20 minutes, you will have 5 minutes to have a short story, an excerpt of a work in progress, or a finished novel, whatever you want, as long as it's SFF. So it's in here. It'll be on Monday the 24th of April. We're postponed by a week because of EasterCon and the bank holiday. And Cheryl's birthday. We'll be here on the 24th, and you can turn up on the night or let us know in advance. There'll be 12 slots available, but as you can see, we're getting a bit better known, and more people are coming up, and I think it will be a popular one.
Alrighty, I've got a couple of things coming up. First of all, in the middle of July at Bristol University, there's going to be a conference called Creative Histories, which is all about the interface between history and fiction. and I pitched them a paper on combating colonialism through steampunk, which they have accepted, and I'm partially going to be talking about Niecy Shull's Everfair, of course, but also I will be talking about Airship Shape and Bristol Fashion, and it's possible that they might want some people to come and do readings or to dress in funny costumes and things like that. So those of you who are in Airship Shape, if you're interested in that sort of thing, let me know. The other announcement is that we have had a presenter drop out, and I have to do an emergency show on Ujima on Wednesday, so if anybody wants to be a guest, come and talk to me. Right, anybody else? In which case, we're done. Thank you very much, and we'll see you in April for the open mic.
The Bristol Con Fringe is a monthly podcast produced by the Bristol Con Foundation. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy174. We'd like to thank the famous Royal Navy volunteer for providing us with a venue, and we'd like to thank you for listening. If you would like to keep up to date with our events, please like our Bristol Con Fringe page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at BrizConFringe.